You're terrible for your kids.
Oh, I see. I think we should just figure out which one. Both of them have the favorites in the
Alright. Call this meeting to order at 6:22 p.m. Before we begin, may I remind you all of the oath you have taken. The Students' Union would also like to honor the nation-to-nation treaty relationship by acknowledging that this meeting is taking place on Treaty 6 territory. Cool. All right. Other announcements. The next meeting of Students' Council will take place on Tuesday, July 8th. Before we go any further, take attendance. President Lau.
President.
Vice President Wurzik.
Here.
Vice President Kinda.
Here.
Vice President Hodgson.
Present.
Vice President Diaz.
Just a second.
Governor Hansara.
It's not that loud. It's the Darth Vader no sound.
Yes. Present.
Counselor Allard.
I'm present.
Yep. Ms. Shi for Counselor Chen. Counselor Bannister.
Present.
Counselor Muhammad.
Present.
Counselor Sleeman.
Present.
Counselor Zhang.
Here.
Counselor Jaddick. Counselor Grokey.
Present.
Counselor Bryce, Counselor Babatunde, Counselor Horvat, Counselor Fidoski, Counselor Jacobson,
here.
Counselor Wong,
here.
Counselor Garg, Counselor Gore, Mr. Genevsky for Counselor Khan, Counselor Krutzi, Counselor Morris, Counselor Mathum has resigned. Counselor Bhatia. Yeah. Counselor Hooper.
Here.
Mr. Simao for Counselor Champagne.
Here.
Is that pronounced correctly?
Simao.
Simao. My apologies, Mr. Simao. Counselor Binchik.
Present.
Counselor Zinedine.
Present.
Counselor Kwan.
Present.
Counselor Peak. Counselor Huang.
Present.
Counselor Farouk.
Present.
Counselor Hudson.
Yep.
Here. Wonderful. All right. So, yes, something else I probably should mention in speaker's business. In the late editions, you should find under one of the information items, Counselor Makhdoum's resignation. So, open studies as a vacant seat now. All right. Moving on to presentations. There are no presentations. Moving on to executive committee reports. Do any members of the executive wish to make a report? Counselor, or Vice President Hodgson, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Apologies to everyone for the meeting starting a bit late. Totally my bad. After CAC, I got a little bit caught up and forgot the council bag at the CAC meeting. So, yeah, apologies for starting late. A couple quick things to add to my report. I just forgot to put in there. There will be a number of, we signed for a number of new locations opening up with the PAW development. We had two spaces to lease out. The executive decided to accept a CHOP lease proposal. It's a health foods style food outlet. So they sell like salads and sandwiches and stuff, really good healthy stuff. As well as LASIK MD will likely be opening up a dentist clinic in PAW. So you can get your teeth cleaned on campus. In sub, we've accepted Bichon Optical in the old Juicy space right near the stairs where
you go up to the second floor there. And the lower level space, we received some proposals, but we deemed none to be really adequate for the kind of space it's going to be. If you haven't checked out the lower level yet, I absolutely recommend to go and look at it. It's beautiful. It's
like super close to being totally done. All the services are moving in there. There's just the other side of it that's being worked on now, but the main portion of it's open. The other two things I wanted to add really quick is I am working kind of hand-in-hand with Monique, the manager of Dewey's, to do kind of a bar kickoff for September. So if you have any ideas of things you would like to see in our bars for kind of a September launch or anything, send me an email, come talk to me. I'm really going to be looking to grab ideas for that. As well, RAT again after this meeting. So please come to RAT to drink whatever beverage you choose.
Thank you, Vice President Hodgson. Do any other members of the executive wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll move on to board and committee reports. Do any... Councillor Binchick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So we met today once again. I'll start with the exciting thing first. So first of all, we agreed to order jackets for council. I have a few samples with me for you to see the color and the size. So please, after the meeting, just come try one on and let me know your size. If you don't want the jacket at all, please also let me know so we don't end up just missing someone by accident. Now the jackets are a little bit over our budget. They amount a little bit over $10. So again, if that would be a huge barrier to you, please talk to me or the speaker. We'll keep it very confidential. Like, we don't want to make it an accessibility barrier, but again, the other option that would be within our budget after the discount that we can receive would only be the hoodies. Everybody in CAG agreed that the jackets would be a better option, so that's why we're going with it. A less exciting announcement, perhaps, is after so much trouble to ratify the appointment of the CRO has resigned because he was accepted to a different title, so the number of hours no longer work for him. We decided to call perhaps tomorrow because we first wanted to consult with council. We decided to call the runner-up. It was a very close tie between Brandon and another candidate. So we'll see if that candidate is still interested. If she is not, we'll strike another hiring committee and begin the process all over again. Why we're trying to call the next runner-up is simply for the sake of time. Okay, I still have 20 seconds. We also changed standing orders today to limit speaking terms to 4 minutes instead of 6. I guess that's a big one. You'll get an official report of that next week. And yeah, I'll leave it there. Just come to the next meeting. We'll be meeting next Tuesday.
Thank you. Councillor Binchick, Governor Hantera.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few things I want to point out in my report. The first thing is pension reform, executive pension reform conference. The executive pensions have been reformed. There's 50. What this results for students and all stakeholders at our institution is that these new pension contribution plans will cost about half what they currently cost. Also, there's about a $75,000 administration fee, which will no longer exist. Furthermore, the liability has shifted for any deficiencies in the pension has shifted from the university to now the executive. So it's the members themselves are now liable for that. So that's a reduction in the liability. It expands our university's financial ability and reduces financial strain on financial flexibility on the institution. That's also important if you scroll up to the first part that there is something about the academic, the employee pension plan being underfunded by $180 million right now. So clearly the board has shown that, listen, executives were making these decisions, they were looking at making sacrifices, and undercutting. Executives aren't immune to any changes out of the administration. I'd also like to thank Doug Goss, the chairman of the board. This was something that was imposed again. It wasn't supposed to be. The university hasn't really announced it yet. First time anyone in the public is hearing about it, it is right now. And it shows that, I think it's highly work on building trust and work towards building a collegial relationship with these individuals. We can achieve results. So hopefully this is a sign for more successes to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Governor Hantera. Any other board and committees? Seeing none, we move on to question period. there are a number of written questions that were submitted on the main board of papers. Start with 5A from Councillor Muhammad to Vice President Ortizic. The bottom of the fourth paragraph of your June 3rd report states that you were in a meeting where changes to the leadership college were made, specifically a communal space, games room, and fitness room was added. The report indicates that only those enrolled in aspects of the leadership program could use the facilities. How many students are enrolled in the leadership program? And there is a response in the late editions. I won't read it because it's three paragraphs long. Four, sorry. Is there any follow-up from the counselor?
Yeah, so in the memorandum of understanding or whatever the agreement was signed with the university, there was a number of 10,000.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's your second question, hey?
Yeah. And, yeah. I didn't really answer to that, so I don't know if that's just great until the session question is asking.
What is your question specifically about my answer?
So, that 10,000 number, is it still there? Is it still going to reach 10,000 students?
That is the ideal hope. I'm going to continue to advocate for 10,000 students because I really would like the funding of the Leadership College and I really want that to extend to programs that already exist that foster leadership. I also, in an ideal world, would really like to see the leadership initiative sort of be like a centralized hub where if a student is looking to be involved in some kind of leadership initiative or experiential learning or stretch experience or anything like that, like they would know that the leadership initiative is like the central location for it, and then it would branch off to other leadership initiatives. So that is the ideal hope. I don't really think that's the way it's going, but I'm hoping to advocate for that, because if it winds up being in that sort of structure, or if it winds up collaborating with other programs or providing funding to other programs, then it impacts 10,000 students. But I don't think that if it just is this sort of insular thing, I don't think it'll reach 10,000, even in 5 years. Does that answer it more thoroughly?
Wonderful. I'm going to go ahead and assume that 5B has been adequately taken care of. Move on to 5C. I don't think this had a response, as far as I can see. I will address this to President Lau, again from Councillor Muhammad. Has there been talk of tuition going up? If so, do we have a plan if it goes up? President Lau.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you again, Mr. Councillor Muhammad, for this question. As we referred in previous question periods and previous answers, unfortunately, there still hasn't been any conversation moving forward. I think one piece I would love to clarify, though, before I defer my speaking turn to Vice President Kinda, is how, or the provincial, I guess, landscape currently, and where the conversations are currently happening. In regards to tuition, with our provincial lobby group, CAUSE, and as we are currently advocating for, a more permanent regulation of the tuition cap, as that's expiring soon, we have to keep that in mind in dealing with the budget cycle this year. If we're advocating for a cap on the more permanent regulation in regards to the CPI cap, then that means that we are, in essence, accepting a tuition increase at a level of CPI. And because of that, if that's the win that we're aiming for, if that's the goal that we're keeping an eye on across the province, then it's really important for us to, tailor the conversation around that. So when we talk to students, they can understand why we're not advocating for lower tuition, and why, if we are able to advocate successfully for a tuition cap, that is already a success. So hopefully we can start to build that narrative, and hopefully that's something you can keep in mind as you ask these questions moving forward. And I'll prefer this as being turned to Vice President Pizza.
Sure. There's not much else to add to that, but I guess I'll just restate that and clarify it a bit. So we have the PSLA, the Post-Secondary Learning Act, and there's also a tuition regulation that's separate from the Act, but it's one of the parts of the Act, and that Act expires in 2016. So right now, there is a review of the way tuition is regulated in the province, and that's something that a lot of stakeholders are working on together. Pretty much what William said is, that's pretty much it. There's no new news on any of this right now. One of PON's main goals is to ensure that there is a cap in place. Because the regulation expired in 2016, one of our goals is to ensure that this cap that we have, this win that we have right now, that it doesn't get taken away. And so our priority still remains making sure that tuition is tied to CPI.
Perfect. Is there any follow-up? Question 5D, I believe, has a response on the first page of the late editions. Questions regarding microwaves, is there any follow-up to that? 5E, once again, has a response on the first page of the late editions. Is there a follow-up question to question 5E?
Yeah. I think it was Vice President Kendo's report. It was mentioned that there was discussions with the Premier about IDF, and there was talk about grandfathering, IDF increases, and that's good for current students, but how about future students? Since grandfathering, it won't affect future students who come and they'll basically increase in tuition. So what's the plan for the future international students that come?
The question was initially directed to Vice President Diaz, but he may defer to Vice President Kinder.
So your question is essentially talking about the merits of the grandfathering clause? So right now there is nothing in place for international students, and that's a problem. And so one of the discussions that have been happening during these meetings with different stakeholders right now is talking about possible avenues for international student tuition. And one of the options is potentially a grandfathering clause. Honestly, there's nothing new to report back on right now. There's no final decisions that have been made. And I do think that that's a good first step. It's a good first step because it provides for some sort of regulation, if that was to happen. And that's not only, for example, one of the causes or one of our main priorities for international tuition would be to also have it regulated in the PSLA with the regulation. So grandfathering could be a component of that. But again, there's nothing else to really say on that at this point. Thanks.
If there's any follow-up, I'll allow that during the oral part of question period. Move on to 5F, which was answered in the late ads. There's also, not to be confused with, there's another item 5F. So the 5F answer is actually the later one after 5B in the late editions. I don't know how that happened. My apologies. Is there a follow-up to this question? Wonderful. 5G was to, assuming to President Lau, there's an answer in the late editions. Is there a follow-up to this particular question?
How did the selection committee react to the four professors that applied to the job? Any present?
Unfortunately, that would be confidential. The one piece that I can let you know about, though, is that there will be a public announcement that addresses this. And it's not actually just one group. There are multiple groups that apply.
Great. I'll follow up during the oral portion. Moving on to 5H. It's not. 5I. There isn't 5I either. Oh, there is a 5I. And there is a response there. In the late editions, 5I is in the late editions, the response is in the late editions. Councillor Bannister, is there any follow-up to 5I?
Is that the chalk one?
Yes. Wonderful. 5J is from Councillor Bannister to Vice President Hodgson. Could you expand upon the request for proposal on the Coke deal? Vice President Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Councilor Bannister, for the question. Just to elaborate a little bit, and we can call it the Coke deal. Really, what like the official name of it, is the Single Source Cool Beverage Agreement. And so we had a Single Source Cool Beverage Agreement meeting last Friday, which is the university side of it. After discussions with them, we've all agreed that we will go to send out a request for proposal. So what this means is from the university, they'll be developing a request basically for providers of cold beverages to send proposals to the university and us to evaluate. We'll have a chance to see the RFP before it goes out. Likely it will take until September or so, late August, maybe late September. That rough time period is what we're looking at to bring to get the RFP out. Likely the RFP will be out for about 3 weeks, absolute minimum, probably more to like 2 months kind of timeline. We are intending to have the process concluded in such a way that it'll come to council, whatever, maybe not the proposals, but the proposal the executives settle on and the kind of skeleton of the deal will come to council. Council will likely then have the choice of whether or not to, say, put the question out or to make the decision at the council level whether or not to re-sign either with Coca-Cola, Pepsi, I don't know, Palm, whatever beverage companies choose to respond to our proposal. That's the basic timeline. I will continue. I know a lot of councillors have this on their radar, so I will continue giving updates as I have them, but that's about it for now. The ball's kind of back in the university's court. They've agreed to go to an RFP, and they are currently in the process of building that RFP. It will just take a considerable amount of time, and we will also see the RFP before it goes out and have the ability to comment on it. So when I do have the RFP, I can kind of give you guys a skinny on it.
Is there a follow-up?
Probably. So will we see which companies you ask an RFP of, if I'm using that correctly?
No. We send out the RFP. We basically say, hey, send us your proposals, and whoever chooses to respond will respond. That decision will be, the process of that decision making will be confidential. It is not it's not a thing you can usually disclose to everyone who applied because it's competitive information between the companies, but that decision will be made likely internally, jointly at this single source cold beverage agreement committee meeting between the SU and the university. And once the decision's been made, and this decision will be made based on the merits of the deal, and then we will put the council note.
Okay. Thanks.
If there's any follow-up, please ask during the oral portion of question period. My apologies to council, but I did skip a question, question 5H, related additions, from Councilor Muhammad to, I'm going to assume, Governor Hansara. Were you at the last board meeting? If not, did you miss any votes? Governor Hansara.
It's directed towards President Lau.
Sorry. It is directed towards President Lau.
Last board meeting was May 9th, I believe, and actually at the May 9th board meeting, we weren't appointed as members yet, so we didn't have a vote.
All right. Is there a follow-up? Okay. Well, if there is a follow-up, I'll allow it during the oral portion of question period, which slowly is... whatever. Anyway, move on to question 5K. I'm going to direct this question to Vice President Diaz from Councillor Bannister. Could you expand upon suborganics and the meeting you had with Shannon LeBlanc about organic waste strategies? Vice President Diaz.
Mr. Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Vice President Diaz, for deferring, and thank you, Councilor Baxter, for the question. So, yeah, this is an initiative both me and Vice President Diaz were initially on, but I'm going to be spearheading. We were contacted by Shannon LeBlanc from Office of Sustainability around the anaerobic digestion facility that's being built in the city. So the city of Edmonton is going to be building this facility. They're looking for organic waste, basically, and want access to all the organic waste the university creates, and part of that will be subs and ESU's organic waste as well. So right now it's kind of in the stages of a lot of, they have some consultants in, and they're looking at kind of how much organic waste is created on a campus, where it comes from, what the retention, or not retention, but like catch rate is, like pre-consumer and post-consumer, ways to optimize all of that. They're looking to get like, what was it, like 2 million tons or some like huge, huge amount of waste. They're about a third of the way there right now, a third to a half, I think. And so they're looking at trying to maximize catching the organic waste on campus. Another piece in this is something I wanted to, I didn't include in my council report, but I wanted to mention as well. I was contacted by a company called Sustainable that is interested in collecting our used grease for use as biodiesel. Right now, we won't be following up with them at all. They also contacted the Office of Sustainability, and right now, actually, I'm waiting for Shannon to get back to me on whether or not the anaerobic digestion facility will be accepting used grease as well, because we don't want to commit all our used grease to another sustainability initiative when we're building this huge facility right in the city for anaerobic digestion to produce biofuels. So we're going to be sitting on that one until we know for sure that if the anaerobic facility can take used grease, we'll be sending it all there and waiting till that facility is finished, which I think it's about a 2 or 3 year timeline. So yeah, right now it's just kind of developing the processes through which collection will happen on campus and how much waste really there is.
Great, so the first 15 minutes of question period has elapsed. Extend question period. I see enough placards. Great. Move on to...
Can I have a follow-up?
Sure.
So do you know how much waste that will take away from what the SU is, like what the university started up in particular? Do you know how much waste that will like, take away from us just throwing out if we follow through with this plan?
I don't believe any of the waste that's being diverted, that will be diverted to this project, is currently being thrown out, because it's already been identified as
right.
organic waste, so
okay.
It goes into, I'm not exactly 100% sure where we send it, but it goes into composting and these kind of things. It's already been tagged as organic waste and compostable, so it's more about diverting the organic waste we already have to a different place to... kind of as far as I see it, a more effective use and to kind of maximize use of this facility. Part of this process, though, will be maximizing our capture of organic waste. For example, our pre-consumer is quite good, so that's the back end of the kitchens and stuff, but our post-consumer is a lot less good, so that's when people buy individual foods or have foods in getting them to throw things in the compost or in the appropriate bins as opposed to just in the waste. So we're looking at ways to improve that process. But, yeah, right now it's all about maximizing the organic waste collection and how much of it we catch.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. We'll now open the floor to oral questions. Before we move on to the oral portion, I'd just like to remind Council, when you're asking a question, please address it to the speaker, not to the individual to whom you're asking the question. Yes. Councillor Bannister.
So, like, D. Hodgson, can you find out where we're currently putting our, like, compost waste?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Councillor Farooq.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not 100% sure who this question goes to, so I'm just going to ask you. With Councillor McBeam resigning, This opens up spaces on different committees, such as audit. Will we be choosing people for those committees today or in the next meeting?
I'll answer just because that's kind of like a point of information or whatever. But basically, it's really up to council how they want to deal with motions from the floor. I actually had a question from Councillor Kwang where he submitted a motion for the next meeting of Students' Council to appoint somebody to bylaw, I believe it was. If council is amenable, I'm sure you could move a motion from the floor to nominate somebody to audit committee to replace Councillor Makhdoum. So it's really up to you and up to council as to how you'd like to move this forward and how you'd like to move motions from the floor. In my previous experience, it's kind of a toss-up. Some councillors appreciate having advanced notice as to who's going to be nominated to what committees, just because the councillors who aren't at council have the ability to basically get nominated by proxy or inform someone else of their intent to put their name in the hat for that committee. However, if it's a pressing matter and you need members of audit because you're having attendance issues or you don't have enough people on audit already, then you could make that case to Students Council.
It's not pressing in the sense that we need people, it's just that I will be leaving in a week and we won't be meeting until after I get back, so.
Then it's probably not a.
Thank you.
Councillor Huang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the President. So in your report, you mentioned something about the residential property taxes. Could you elaborate on that issue?
Sure. So we're going to start on your answer. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And then I'll defer to Vice President Kinda and or Vice President Diaz if they would like to speak. So one issue that we have on our campus is that residences are required to pay property taxes, whereas other university buildings aren't or don't have to. And this is an issue that we've seen on our campus for quite a while, because usually these costs then are offloaded to the students. It's also unfortunate that this is a scenario where the key or the responsibility that it falls under isn't quite clear. So for example, if we went to the province in regards to this issue, they would refer us back to the city. If we went to the city, they would often blame the province. So to kind of work on that together this year, we had a meeting with the Mayor Edison and two other councillors, McEwen and Nate, and their Students Association were also at the table. And we learned that the municipal government of the city was currently working on an ask to the province, and we called it their heads and beds type of campaign, let's call it. So what this campaign would ask for is for funding for the service that's being provided. So I guess to give a little bit more context, if you take senior homes, for example, senior homes are another example, like residences, where property tax is, where almost the city doesn't feel fully comfortable collecting property tax, but is given the authority to do so. And that's also a really important source of revenue that you don't want to forego. So given that context, seniors are often moving into larger cities for seniors' homes, whereas their taxes are paid to municipalities, such as those in smaller towns. So that causes it creates a situation where the city then has to pay for services to citizens that aren't local taxpayers. So the campaign that the city is running is now to ask for the government for heads and beds funding, which would create a pool of money going from the province to the city, so that the city could provide these services to citizens without collecting property tax, even if they aren't born and raised and taxpaying in their local city. That's because it just really depth.
So, President Lau did a pretty good job of covering all of that. Just for some more background context. So the way that the governing structure works is that there's legislation from the province, and the province decides how cities are run and all of that. And they have given authority to cities to collect property taxes from certain places and certain buildings. And they're allowed to collect. Alberta is one of the only provinces that lets its cities collect property taxes from campus residences, like dormitories. And some other provinces don't do that. And the city has decided to do that. And so the city taxes our properties, our dormitories. And in the past, there's been a lot of advocacy done by students on this. And they go to the city, and they ask the mayor, and they ask counselors, and we keep getting the same response that, no, it's the province's problem. Because why would the city choose to forego all this revenue that they're getting from this taxation? And then if you ask the province is like, oh, well, it's up to the city, and they don't have to levy the tax. And so right now what's happening in the province is there's the MGA review, the Municipal Governance Act, and that review is taking place. And so what William was talking about was for the MGA review, they're opening up discussion to the public, and they're asking for feedback on the act itself. And so the city, as an entity, is putting together a proposal that's called a heads and beds tax, and that's something that happens in Ontario. And so that's the model they're using, and they're going to submit that to the province, and we'll see what happens next.
Great. Once again, a reminder, when you're posing a question, if you find yourself using the words you, that's not posing a question to the speaker, that's posing a question to the person. So when you're posing a question, please say, Mr. Speaker, I was wondering if the Vice President of Operations and Finance could discuss this portion of the single source beverage agreement. Similarly, in all your responses, please make sure you're referring to people by their titles, as opposed to saying, Kevin, please use Councillor Jacobson, or Sangram, use Governor Hansrail. Just, it's a formal meeting. I'd like to keep it that way. President Lau.
Mr. Speaker, I was wondering if Councillor Beamshik had any updates or any progress on the SCED recommendation.
Thank you for the wonderful question. Councillor Beamshik.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, there has been some progress, namely CACUS approved today. A council survey that we'll be administering every year. So please expect it, hopefully next week. Expect it to receive it, and please fill it out. It shouldn't take too long. But again, we rely on your willingness to fill out the survey to make sure that kind of the initiative is successful. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Muhammad.
Mr. Speaker, this question is directed towards the President of the State of the Union. I'd like to give clarification on statements. My understanding was the President was on last year's council, and when we got information on the Leadership College, I'm reading a news release from February 24th that said the university tends to raise...
Sorry, before you move on with the rest of your question, does anyone, because I'm assuming you're just reading from your screen,
yeah.
Does anyone have any objection to Councillor Muhammad reading from papers? Does everyone understand what that means? Is there anyone who doesn't understand what that means? So basically, just to clarify, Councillor Muhammad is going to be reading from something that not everybody in council has direct access to read at that moment. So by giving him permission to read from papers, you're allowing him to read from whatever he has in front of him that you might not be able to see. Any objections to that? Sorry.
Yeah,
please continue.
The press release is from Monday, February 24th, 2014. And the last point says the university tends to raise funds for upper deposit programs that are part of the Peter Lawton Leadership College. The target of 10,000 students as intensive participants. With my understanding, last year's council was given the guarantee and a promise from the university that 10,000 students would take part in this. But now the dialogue has shifted from now that's a hope. In the meeting that you were in, the meeting that the president was in with the president of the university, was that even given to us as a promise, or was that a hope? And if so, why was this communicated as a promise to last year's council?
President Lau.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would say that that's a vision. The vision of having a leadership college that provides service to one-third of undergraduates on our campus. Unfortunately, I wouldn't say it's a smart goal. It wasn't time-bound, so there is no specific timeline as to when we want to reach 1,000 students or 10,000 students. I think this is something that our students' union will continue to advocate for. I think it's unfortunate that we are at such preliminary stages of the conversation, and that's why a lot of these details aren't hashed out yet. The next meeting that Vice President Ordzik and myself have in regards to this will be in, I believe, end of August. And on the bright side, though, Vice President Ordzik is meeting with the founding principal, Kim, right Honorable Kim Cavill, in the near future to continue these discussions to ensure that funding for programs like community service learning and the undergraduate research initiative continue. And if we are able to ensure that these programs are funded through the Leadership College, the reach of the Leadership College will be greatly enhanced.
Just a follow-up?
I'll put you back on the speaker's list for a follow-up. Councillor Quang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm wondering if VP Diaz could provide more information on the progress of creating the Students Union or Students Council logo, and if Council will be able to see sample designs before it gets approved before a week of welcome.
Vice President Diaz.
Thanks. So that's part of a larger conversation with marketing. Right now, we're focusing really hard on getting that calendar done because it's tying into a, like, a larger thought of like how could an SU calendar look. So that's the focus of the department right now, and that's what our web guys are working on a lot. So the logo is still on the table, and we're going to look into that in the next month or a half or so.
Wonderful. Councillor Bannister.
I pass.
Councillor Muhammad.
This question is directed towards the President of the Students' Union. Since there's this misinformation between the promise given to last council and what we have now, will the President ask the President of the Leadership College, Kim Campbell, to come to council to hear our thoughts on this proposal?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think there was probably an appetite from both ends, from council and the founding principal, Right Honorable Kim Campbell, to have that conversation. And I will definitely follow up to make sure that that's on her agenda.
Wonderful. That exhausts my list of speakers, so I'll move on. So that closes the question period. We will move on to item 6A, Board and Committee Business. Kinda Champagne moves that on the recommendation of Policy Committee, the mandatory non-instructional fee policy be approved in first reading based on the following principles. The principles are listed under item 6A on the main order papers.
Inquiry.
Yes.
Isn't our speaking turns only 4 minutes now, not 6 minutes?
So, from my understanding of Robert's rules, the manner in which rules change is that when the rules are officially sort of reported, changes are officially reported to council, then the change takes place. So I am of the opinion that that comes in a written form as opposed to an oral form. If councillors feel as though a oral form is sufficient, then we can move forward with 4 minutes as speaking turns. So going back to the motion, that's a great point. Vice President Kinda, would you care to introduce?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, as you may or may not know, the mandatory non-instructional fee policy, like one of the political policies, has expired from last year's council. And so this year's policy committee has taken it upon themselves to rewrite a new policy. And we're not necessarily doing it from scratch because we still have the old documents. So we're looking at them. And essentially what we have for you today are the first principles. And these first principles, this is not word for word how the policy will look. These are the principles informing what we want the policy to say. So pretty much if somebody asks you, why do you want to write an MF policy? These are the reasons why. And so today in council, we can debate these principles and hopefully pass them. And then next time, policy committee will bring you a second reading of this policy.
Wonderful. All right, moving to debate. Councillor Muhammad.
I'd like to make an amendment to 2.7 to strike the word some, so it reads, a high and unpredictable cost of education is a barrier to students.
I'm going to just hold off on the amendment just until we have a little bit of debate. After we have a few points of debate, then I'll entertain your motion to amend. Does anyone want to speak for or against this particular motion? Councillor Brookie?
I'd like to speak in favor of this motion. It essentially covers all the same points that the original policy or the old policy, prior policy covers, but it also takes into account there's points that we have addressed in these new first principles that address the changing nature of what we're looking at now, as opposed to what it was 4 years ago when the old policy was drafted. And a lot of time was put into these first principles, and I think that it really does cover all the areas that need to be covered, from what exactly MSRs are, to regulation, to the actual financial burden. So, and I think it also it addresses what we're asking from the government and what we're asking from the university itself.
Great. Councillor Benjamin.
Well, I'm just wondering, can this be in the form of a question?
Sure.
Okay, I guess this would be to the policy committee. Are there any drastic changes from what the policy was? Oh, sorry.
So I'll that's a question to the floor. So if Vice President Kind or Councillor Kruelke want to answer that question, they'll have to use one of their speaking turns. That's the only catch to asking a question. They can't respond immediately.
Okay. Well, you don't have to respond then. I like them.
Councillor Huang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm also in favor of this motion. I'm just wondering, point six says that MNIFs are above and beyond tuition, which is a sticker price. I would like that point to be clarified, because I'm not really sure what a sticker price refers to and all those things. So, yeah.
All right. Going to entertain Councillor Muhammad's motion to amend point 7, I believe it was, to remove word some. Is that correct? Is there a seconder for this particular motion? Councillor Farouk? Just let me get this all up on here and allow you to introduce Councillor Muhammad. Kinda?
So I guess I'll explain why we chose to add the word sum. And we did have a little bit of discussion about this in the committee. So when it comes to advocacy, one of my priorities and one of CAUSE's priorities is to advocate for things like upfront grants and bursaries that are targeted to students. So students who would like to target these grants and bursaries to would be rural students, Aboriginal students, and low-income students. The idea is that, economically speaking, it's just more efficient and more equitable to provide funding for students who need it rather than universal funding. For example, we have something right now which is called a completion grant. And for any student that applies for a student loan, they're eligible for $2,000 at the end as free money, essentially. And so for us, this means that even students who don't have a barrier to education, they're still receiving aid, when instead that financial assistance can be given more directly to students in need. So this this phrase, it represents the principle that we shouldn't necessarily be giving money, grants and funding to all students, because not all students have a high level of need. So instead that money should be directed to, more money should be directed to students who really do have a high level of need. And so that's why we added the word some, just so it reflects that, because that also informs the way that I would advocate to the government. So that's the understanding there. So hopefully that makes sense to everyone. Let me know if that doesn't.
Captain Muhammad?
I don't see the connection between the word sum and the principle when it comes to advocating. Just in my opinion, it makes sense for, since these are first principles and they're guidelines, it makes sense to have the principle as a student assuming that education is expensive for all students. Some students may have barriers, and if that's the case, we should add another clause where it says that and makes it more explicit, because it doesn't say that specifically. I think we should, yeah, I just think we should have the principle that education is a barrier for all students, regardless of income. Yeah.
Councillor Shane?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak against this motion, simply because of the fact that I feel like not all students believe that the cost of tuition, especially in this province, is high, and not all students believe that it is a barrier. And I think as a students' union, as well as students' council, we should be representative of our constituency. And I know that we cannot for sure 100% say that the cost of tuition is expensive or high to all students, which is why I think also we kind of had this discussion in policy as well, that we decided to use the word some, because in our political policies, we should be inclusive of all our constituency, so we still want to kind of push out certain people who are not included in the wording of our political policy.
Thank you, Councillor Zhang. Just check something. Sorry. Councillor Allard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would love to speak in favor of this motion, because I think just by the nature of the words high and unpredictable costs, those do represent a barrier. It doesn't necessarily speak to the degree of the barrier, but it reflects a value that's just generally the lower the cost of education, the more predictable, the less of the barrier that there would be to any students, not relatively speaking.
Thank you, Councillor Allard. Governor Hatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with what Councillor Mohammed is saying in favor of. I really do. What Councillor Zhang said also resonates with me. Sometimes, in my experience, in my position, the senior administration, board members, there's often a misconception that we represent. We don't necessarily represent the entire student demographic. And with that, and with Councillor Mohammed's approach, I think we're maybe putting ourselves in a little pigeonhole where we again fit that stigma. When we say some students, it also adds with President, Vice President Kinda and President Mao are going to advocate to the provincial government, maybe advocating to the senior administration. Having a policy that says that shows that, that we understand that, we aren't just here, that we're reasonable individuals, and we understand that it's just not limiting, that we understand that it may not be a barrier to just all students, but a small students, and we understand that there are students that come from decent, from high-level socioeconomic status, where money isn't an issue, right? Saying that it affects all students, the counter-argument then becomes to the administration, look how much public institutions in Ontario are paying for tuition, look how much public institutions are paying in great American institutions. So we limit ourselves if we're trying to make this argument, which I do feel that I buy into the theory, but from a pragmatic perspective, it's harder to sell that all students are affected, and it's much more reasonable, much more effective argument. We say, listen, some students are affected, and like Vice President Kima said, then we can be more tangible and more efficient, more effective results for those students that are generally affected and are more seriously affected by bad community non-destructive.
Thank you, Governor Hansara. Vice President Diaz.
Would Councillor Mohammed be amenable to amending the amendment to just say most students as opposed to some students?
Just to inform Council, Councillor Mohammed doesn't have any speaking turns left, so he probably won't be able to respond to the other questions for him. But he kind of already gave you his response.
To explain the thought on that, so it's number 7, a high and unpredictable cost of education is a barrier to some students. High and unpredictable costs would not be a barrier to all students, given that there are some students who are wealthy, and some students that voice that there isn't a barrier to them. So to say that it is a barrier to all students would not be a true statement. But I think when we use qualifiers like some or all or most, then it provides for a true statement. That's the basis for my thought there, but I can defer to you now to get your thoughts on it. If you'd like.
No, you can't.
For information.
Yes.
Councilman, you will be there time.
No. No. That is not allowed according to Robert's Rules of Order.
I'd like to challenge the chair.
And Roberts, well, I'll explain this during my introduction, but just to give a brief explanation, Councillor Mohammed is challenging my ruling that no one can yield the floor to him or defer their speaking turn or their speaking time to him. So, just to give Council a quick overview of how challenging works, I'll actually read straight from here once I can find it. And also, I encourage Council to challenge me as the chair. Like I said earlier, I'm not the all-knowing, all-seeing eye of speakerness. I think I used those words exactly, so please feel free to challenge me whenever you feel the need to do so. Sorry, just give me 1 second to find exactly where this is. Would Council be amenable to having a 5-minute recess while I look all this information up and then I can tell you this?
Can I tell you why?
No, I'm just trying to find exactly what, like, in Robert's rules, not what my argument is, but how a challenge the chair works so that I can explain it to everybody. It's not, like, I'm looking up all these rules so that I can make my case. It's more of... We can just recess if that's okay with the council.
Actually, you recess now? Okay.
Yes, we'll recess for 5 minutes.
Can everybody write all the sizes and let me know their sizes?
Yes.
Also, if you didn't get your council discount card, please come talk to me. I think I gave everyone here, but...
Okay, go through
the document.
Oh, really?
Natalia.
Yes, pick any color and any size that you'd like.
Any color?
Purple. Oh, any color of the ones that you have.
Are they going to have stitching or anything?
Yes, so there will be a logo with our team union and your name in the position.
Oh, also, for people who use reusable plates, when you're done with them, please put them back in the black crate. Thank you.
Yes.
or something like that.
We should have a policy saying you can have a
It's not a policy, it's like a VPA initiative or students for parents. Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's a whole section in this about how you're supposed to be a bigger. There's a whole bylaw about it, so yeah, definitely doesn't need a policy as well.
I remember the executive money Adam called for a lot.
Yeah.
Sign up on my laptop. Like our own stuff on it or whatever?
Oh, that's my answer.
Like your
name? How much like as much as last time?
Just a tip, just to see how it feels. Direct quote from Wedding Crashers.
I think it's like five calves. Easy peasy.
What color is the jacket? Green and white. All my cuffs jackets are all black. Like a forest green.
My question is, do we go with the green jacket? No one wears jackets. Jay wears a jacket. Wow, that jacket was actually nice on a thick one.
That was a nice jacket. I have two of those, and those are not nice to wear.
It's a long trip, you can walk from door to door. Oh, is that right?
Too bad you don't live in a pub. You can just go up inside everywhere to all of your parts. That's not going to happen.
We literally are two closest buildings. Literally the two closest buildings on campus.
And it's going to cost you like $2 million to do.
Yeah. I told the dean very explicitly what my thoughts are on the...
All right, everyone, recess is over. Please take your seats. Alright. Hey. Council Bannister, go sit down. Thank you. All right. So, to give a brief summary, according to Robert's Rules of Order, new, revised, in brief, fully updated second edition. In debate on an appeal, each member may speak only once, except that the chair may speak twice, the second time at the close of debate. Appeal is not debatable if it relates to indecorum or transgression of the rules of speaking, or to the priority of business, or if made while an undebatable question is immediately pending or involved in the appeal.
Weird.
All right. So, very clearly under Chapter 4, under Item A, Rules of Debate, Item 1, Speech Limits in Debate. You may speak in debate twice on any debatable motion on the same day. Each time you may speak for up to 10 minutes. In our case, it's 6 minutes. These limits apply to any organization that has not adopted special rules, blah, 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 blah. You cannot save time or transfer it to someone else, period. So you cannot, for example, speak for 5 minutes your first time up and 15 minutes the second time if you have 10 minutes per speaking turn. Unlike the practice in Congress, you cannot yield the floor to let someone else speak on your time, except that you can choose to let people ask you questions on your time. Yes.
So when it says that we cannot yield our time to anybody else, is it a sign that we can yield our time to members who are not of council, just like students at large?
Are you talking about guests of council?
Yeah, like during debates.
That's where it gets a little bit of a, like, gray. And I think that CAC may have amended that in their last meeting, I believe.
Point of parliamentary?
Yes.
So Vice President Diaz were here this time, Councillor Mojave asked a question. Vice President Diaz could still yield his time to Councillor Bashir, correct?
Only to ask a question and only as a request for information, as far as I understand.
So point of parliamentary inquiry. So Councillor Mohammed
is moving into debate.
Can frame this question, correct?
In a request for information, yes. Oh, well, you had your placard up, so I'm assuming you want to add a point of debate.
I do that.
Yeah? Yeah? Okay. You can request for information and ask him a question if you'd like.
Request for information.
So,
to Vice President.
Do you want to withdraw your challenge then?
Yeah.
Okay. Want to know, yes. All right.
Request for information to actually any counselor that was on council last. Actually,
yes, Councillor Grilke.
Can you do that?
No. Your request for information has to be to the person whose speaking turn it is. So you can request for, you can ask Vice President Diaz for information, for example, if he is not able to answer. Someone else can rise on a point of debate and answer your question.
Okay. Request for information, Vice President Diaz. What do you think about what I'm going to say?
Point of order?
Yes, Councillor Grilke.
A point request for information can't include debate, can it?
That is correct. So, try to frame your question in the manner in which it provides some information to the Vice President, as opposed to adding points of debate because you can't do that in a request for information.
Does the story count as a debate?
Depends on the manner in which you frame the story.
Can you tell Vice President Diaz what do you think of the following story?
That's still a point of debate.
Yeah. To Vice President Diaz. Can someone help me out?
Can I call the question?
What? Not yet.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no. Can I move to suspend Robert's rules?
If,
Can I have a point of view?
You can move to suspend standing orders so that you have additional speaking turns.
Can I move to suspend standing orders to have an additional speaking
turn? Yes, you may. But I will... I'm assuming... I'll allow this motion on the basis that Vice President Diaz has ended his speaking turn.
What a parliamentary
yes.
Vice President Diaz officially make an amendment to an amendment?
No.
Because what if that starts speaking turns all over again?
No, Vice President Diaz, as far as I know, did not make any amendments. He just asked Councillor Muhammad if he was amenable to, if he would be amenable to an amendment to the amendment, which would read most... Yes.
Could we save us all time right now and someone make a motion to amend the amendment to most and then we can have a discussion?
Of course you can. But once again, I'll assume that Vice President Diaz's speaking turn is over, but now it is Councillor Muhammad, sorry, has made a motion to suspend standing orders. Would you like to continue with this motion, or do you want to just allow somebody, or do you want to move to amend this motion to something else?
Move to make an amendment But if this fails, we'll just go back to the sum, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So...
Oh, man.
Okay, so the amendment was initially made to the main motion to eliminate the word sum from Clause 7. A motion is being proposed to add in the word most in the place of the word sum, basically. I'm only allowing this because it's germane to this particular... point of discussion. Is there a seconder for this motion? Councillor Farooq. Councillor Muhammad, would you care to introduce, or do you want to just go directly into debate?
Let's go into debate. So I don't think it should be most, I think it should be...
yes, Councillor Farooqi.
Can someone who moves something be against the motion?
They can be, but it's generally not recommended. The mover of the motion should be in favor of it. The seconder is just there to basically allow the motion to happen. Technically, Councillor Muhammad is allowed to vote in whatever manner he chooses.
Okay.
It's generally not recommended to vote against the motion that you've proposed.
Parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
If this motion fails and we go back to sum, does debate start again and everybody gets a new debate?
No.
Okay.
So it goes back to the original speakers list that I have for the amendment, in which Councillor Muhammad does not have any more speaking turns remaining, but you still have one. Go ahead.
The reason why I'm really concerned about this and why I want it to be two students instead of some students is because I feel like the assumption on this principle is based on the demographics of the current student body that we have, which is made up of largely students who can afford education, students who are more wealthier, more privileged backgrounds, and a smaller percentage from students from low-income backgrounds, students who need, you know, non-refundable grants and everything. I don't feel like this principle takes into the scope of... So we have a tiny bubble, and that's where we're thinking now. If we expand it to all high school students in the province, or just all junior high students, all elementary students, those are all people that could be going to post-secondary. And if we make this principle, the cost of a high non-refundable cost of education is a barrier to students, then we take into account that huge, you know, scope. For example, in my old neighborhood, it was low-income housing, and a lot of students didn't want to go to university because of how much it was. You're paying $7,000 to go to university while you can make $100,000 going up to Fort Mac. So even though a large percentage of students right now, a significant portion of students right now at the university can afford to go to post-secondary, if we expanded the scope, the demographic and made it affordable, let's say we made university free, then there'd be a more equitable, you know, percentage of low-income students, the high-income students, and all that. I guess the reason why I'm rambling is too often when we make policies and we have principles, we don't often think about, you know, future students. We kind of keep ourselves stuck in the now and not thinking about all the students that could potentially go to university. So I just want us to have a principle as a student's union that education It's a high cost, it's unpredictable, it's for two students, high income, low income, whatever, it's very small students. And I believe putting some just ties our hands and isn't the principle that we should be moving towards. By putting two students, it's general enough so that we can advocate within this big scope. It's not like our hands are tied, it still allows us to advocate. So that's why I want the not the most amendments, but to strike the sum. Thank you.
Wonderful. Just something before I move on to further points of debate. In the future, if a situation like this arises where somebody has used both their speaking turns, council would like them to continue to speak, recommend suspending standing orders instead of making an amendment to the amendment, because it makes it very difficult for me to judge whether or not a point is germane to this particular discussion, because it has to be germane to the amendment, not the amendment, if that makes sense. So, move on, but for the future, keep that in mind. Councilor Farouk.
I believe that most is probably a better choice than some, despite the fact of debating so much on a single word. I will not talk about that. But I feel like most is probably a better option. Just to say the fact that Students' Union does advocate for tuitions that are lower and going off the basis that a tuition is better to most students is a good policy to go off of. Because, case in point, while most students can't afford education, it's also because most students have their parents paying for education entirely, in which case it's a burden to them rather than the students. So we should probably keep that in mind, because that might be something that would be overlooked by a lot of people, because we do take that for granted. And yeah, like I would agree with most of the points that Councillor Muhammad did make, that going off the basis that we want to reduce these barriers for every student out there, we should be going off the basis that there's a barrier in every way, shape or form, financially as well as others. Thank you.
Moving on, Councillor Sleeman. Councillor Binchik.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to just state that these are first principles, and excuse me, I think in first principles we don't really debate wording in that much detail. I would encourage debates like these ones to happen like during the comedy time, so that we can have more efficient council meeting. For me, like, I understand the importance of being very precise about each word, but at the same time, I don't say it doesn't matter to me, because it, of course, does. But I also have so much trust in our executives that I don't think we should be spending, like, 45 minutes discussing that word. Thank you.
Vice President Diaz.
Pass.
Well, point of inquiry?
Yes.
Do I need to use my turn to make a main call to question? Can I just do that?
You can actually just do that if you'd like.
So, who was the call to question?
All right. Council Farouk has called to question. Is there a seconder to call to question? Councilor Grookey. All right. So, as far as I remember, call to question is not debatable, non-amendable, and requires a two-thirds majority. All those in favor of calling to question, please raise your placards. It's okay, you can raise your hand if you can't reach for your placard right away. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Wonderful. So that passes unanimously. So the vote is on the amendment to the amendment, which reads, blah, 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 blah. Point 7, high and unpredictable cost of education is a barrier to most students. Blah, 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 blah. All those in favor of this particular amendment to the amendment, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Great. That fails. Moving back to the amendment, the speaker's list for the amendment. Councilor Kwan isn't here. This wraps up my speaker's list. All right. All those in favor. So we'll now vote on the amendment, which would remove the word some from point number 7 so that it reads a high and unpredictable cost of education is a barrier to students. All those in favor of this particular amendment, please raise your placards. All those opposed? That amendment fails. So we'll move back to... just give me one second here. Move back to my speaker's list for the main motion. Councilor Farouk.
I just want to clarify principles number 3 and 4. They've been saying that MNIST are unregulated by the government of Alberta, and number 4 with that. Existing MNIST continues at discretion of the university. These more or less just seems like facts and definitions. Is there the intention of voicing concern, the issue was concerns of what they will do after the fact, like does the issue want MNIST to be regulated and not making changes just at the discretion of the university, just from discretion of the university, and instead making them, you know, be more, sorry, having more consultation? Is that the intention, or am I just confused? Thank you.
Well, it's fortunate that Vice President Kinda is next on my speaker's list.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, obviously, I'm in favor of these principles, and I'll just go through some concerns that were raised so far. So, regarding points 3, and actually regarding the structure of how we did this, when we were coming up with the first principles, we kind of had a bunch of ideas, and eventually we structured them so that generally the first half is more like facts, like statements that are true, and the second half is more reflective of actual values and principles. So, for example, point 3 is pretty clear. MNIST are unregulated as it stands right now. And point 4 says they can change at the discretion of the university, which is also true because the university can decide what the price is year to year. And going to point 6, the sticker price essentially means the price that students see. So, for example, when you're in high school and you're considering going to university, you're going to look up the tuitions of universities across the country. What you get is like... the price per course kind of thing. So say it's 7 grand or 8 grand or 6 grand. That's the sticker price. But when universities talk about tuition, they don't necessarily include the price of MNIST in that cost, so it's not reflected in that sticker price, so to speak. So that's what that's saying. And so once we get to point 7, you can see a little bit of a shift in tone, and that's more value-based. So going back to what Councillor Farouk was asking, yes, we are including values. So for example, some of the main principles that we have is that university expenses should be predictable, it should be affordable, accessible, and fees, what they pay for, it should be accountable and transparent. And that's what points 8, 9, and 10 all talk about, as well as 11. So, excuse me, point 8 is about predictability, point 9 reflects the principle of affordability, point 10 reflects the point of accessibility, because affordability and accessibility are slightly different. Point 11 addresses the value of accountability, and point 12 is all about transparency. So we just wrote these principles in a way to reflect that. And so once we actually draft second reading, we'll be more explicit in saying what we want.
Thank you, Vice President Kinda. Councillor Muhammad.
I'd like to speak against this motion based on point number 2, that says students are willing to pay for services that benefit them. Just on a like, healthcare benefits me, but I don't pay for healthcare. And I believe, you know, just tying that now, at least somewhat back to full secondary education, having that statement there, willing to pay for services that benefit them. I guess so in, like, our society, which is very, you know, based on, you know, exchanging goods for money and all that stuff, like our province. Sure, okay, fine. But I just don't like that because it opens up the door for, it doesn't say how much we're willing to pay for services, it says we're willing to pay for services that benefit us. Does that mean they're going to jack up the healthcare fee, jack up the UPass, jack up, you know, let's say they make a mandatory non-instructional. So, like, the rationale behind mandatory non-instructional fees is that they benefit the students. So if we look at it from the university's perspective, the second policy point basically buys right into what they're saying about mandatory non-instructional fees. I personally think education is too expensive, the services are too expensive, and by putting students are willing to pay for services that benefit them, we're just, I don't think we're doing students a service because we're opening the door for more expensive dental care, healthcare coverage, UPass coverage. Yeah. Tuition has gone up 360% since 1990. It's too much. So I'm voting against it based on the second point.
Thank you very much. Councillor Grookey. Councillor Zhang.
I would like to make a friendly amendment to the second principle to read, students are willing to pay a reasonable fee for services that benefit.
So, do you want to remove this section?
No, sorry.
If students are willing to pay, sorry. Do you want to input those words in there?
Yes.
Anything else?
No.
Is there a seconder for this particular motion? Councillor Hudson. Is there anyone opposed to carrying this motion as friendly? Councillor Muhammad. Would you like to introduce or would you want to go just straight into debate?
Just go into debate.
Okay. Do you want to?
No.
Councillor Muhammad.
Reasonable is still vague and it still opens it up to interpretation. Next year's council can say 10% increase on the health care fee is reasonable or the other mandatory non-instructional fees. It's a big statement. It may be reasonable for someone whose high income who happens to be in a student leadership position, and it may not be reasonable for someone who's low income and who can't afford to go to school. So, it's too big.
Vice President Ordzik.
I'd like to speak against this amendment because we're talking about first principles, and I don't believe that this change substantially changes the meaning of the line.
Councilor Sleeman.
Well, what Vice President Kinda said first is that, like, the first 7 points are facts, and I'm pretty sure it's a fact that people want to pay something for a fee that for a service that benefits them. We're not discussing the amount that it is, that this fee has to be, we're just saying, okay, like, I benefit from the dental service, or I benefit from the UPass, and I can use it, so I'll pay a fee for that. And I don't see anything, like, being unreasonable, since, like, for what we pay for UPass, using it is very cheap, considering, like, what people that don't go to school pay. They pay almost, like, in 2 months what we pay in a semester. So you thinking that, oh, you're going to jack the price by 200% next semester or next year, and that is unreasonable. That's all I have to say, but, like, I don't have any questions. Facts, values, points.
Councilor Lard? I would just pose a motion to the floor, and you can ask. You just say this question is intended for Vice President Kinda. She can choose to answer or not. It's up there.
This question is intended for Vice President Kinda. Did you say in the meeting that that line was backed up by some survey data that you had? So I agree with what Councilor Muhammad is saying, but maybe I may be more in the way that it's backed up by data than it is.
So just give me 1 second so I can pull this back up. Councillor Muhammad.
If it's backed up on data, I just want to know, is that survey done from current U of A students or prospective U of A students? Because if it's done from prospective U of A students, then I believe the data would be different. different. Also, the wording of the question, willing to pay for services that benefit them. I mean, like, let's say in some U.S. states you have to, like, it's illegal to pump your own gas, so you pay a person guy to pump your gas. Does that benefit you? Somebody can say it benefits you. I guess what I'm trying to say is, I mean, the question is kind of skewed when put on a survey. And also, if it only surveyed current U of A students, then that's not the point I'm trying to get to. The point I'm trying to get to is all students who could potentially go to the university. Like, this fee is really reasonable for us, but I'll say again, like the UPAT, no, the healthcare fee is reasonable for us, but I'll say again, it may not be reasonable for some students.
Can I call the question on the main motion?
No. You can call the question on this amendment, but you can't call the question
on
the
main
motion. All right. Well, my speaker list is exhausted, so I'm just going to assume that no one else wants to speak on this amendment. So I'm just going to go ahead. Well, if there is other people, then better vote against the call to question. I'm just trying to make council more efficient so you don't have to vote six times to get something done. So my speaker's is exhausted, so I'm just going to assume that the call to question, we're just going to vote on whether or not we want to move the amendment or not. Is that clear for everyone? I'm just kind of choosing to ignore the call to question so that we can just vote. Cool? Wonderful. So the amendment reads as follows. Services are essential to the student experience, and students are willing to pay a reasonable fee for services that benefit them. All those in favor of this particular amendment, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? That motion fails. We'll go back to debate on the main motion. Next person on my speaker's list is Vice President Kinda now.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I guess I will explain point two. So there is research done on this, and Vice President Ritzak could back this up later if he did. But there was a survey done which said that when students are approached with a question regarding a potential fee, for example, in the case of the Lee referendum, students tend to vote in favor of having this fee as long as it benefits them. So what this is saying, this principle goes directly in line with point 11, meaning that if we have some sort of student approval mechanism, aka a referendum, that's okay because if we can get the consent of students for a service which they're paying for, that's okay. Because right now, any new fee that's imposed by the university, there is no student approval mechanism in place. It just happens. So one of our lobby points is obviously on the government side of things, right? But on the institution side of things, we also want to say, hey, it'd be great if we could have some sort of student approval mechanism, meaning if you're going to introduce a new fee, make sure we have a referendum in place that we can, so students know what they're paying for. And that's essentially what point two is talking about. So for example, this, yeah, I think it was 70% of all referendums have been approved by students regarding new fees, and that's what this point is discussing. Yep.
Was the scope of that Canadian students?
Pardon me?
Was the scope of the service simply for Canadian students? Or
I don't have the answer to that right now, but I can get back to council with that.
Yep. How do we prevent something happening like the athletic recs fee,
yep,
where students voted against it, but yet the council will support?
Yep.
Would this new political policy like change how we handle plebiscites so that we don't go about doing what we did with the recs?
I don't think this policy is in that scope. This policy is germane just to mandatory non-instructional fees and how we're approaching them in terms of lobbying. We want to get into discussion of the meaning behind plebiscites and referendums that can happen at a different time. But essentially what this is talking about is that students, there should be accountability in place, whether that's from the government end of things or the institution side of things. And in terms of advocacy, for what myself and perhaps other vice presidents will be doing, is ensuring that students are covered on both ends of the deal, so to speak. And that's the only reason that point's in there. Because students are willing to pay for services that benefit them. And this is something that we can take to the university. So when we go to the university and say, hey, you want to implement a new fee? Fine. Just make sure we get something for what we're paying for. And that's a benefit to students. And if students can agree on that, there'll be a referendum, and if it's a yes, that's great. If it's a no, that's also fine. But that's all this principle is talking about.
Call the question.
Governor Hasra has called to question. Once again, there is nobody on my speaker's list, so we're just going to vote on the motion. So, Kinda Champagne, move that upon the recommendation of Policy Committee, move that the mandatory non-instructional fee policy be approved in first reading based on the following principles. Principles are listed in the main agenda as well as on your screen. All those in favor of this motion, please raise your placards. Division has been called.
One parameter increase?
Yes.
Is there any way we could get out of college division? Because this is becoming a trend.
Technically, yes, but only in the case of an amendment. On the main motion, if somebody calls for division, this is how it goes. Yes.
Can I call for division? Call for after we already started voting.
Sorry?
Can I call for division? Yes, after we've already started voting.
Oh, that's tough. Let me get back to you on that. Just bear with me for a second. Alright, so according to Robert's rules, division can be called during or actually after a vote is taken. So record all these votes. President Lau.
In favor.
Vice President Orczyk.
In favor.
Vice President Kinda.
In favor.
Vice President Hodgson.
In favor.
Vice President Diaz.
In favor.
Governor Hasra.
Abstention.
Councilor Allard.
Abstain.
Ms. Shi for Councilor Chen. She's here. Councilor Bannister.
In favor.
Councilor Mohammed.
Opposed.
Councilor Sleeman. Councilor Zhang.
In favor.
Councilor Jadak. Councilor Grulke.
In favor.
Councilor Bryce. Councilor Babatunde. Councilor Horvat. Councilor Fidoski. Councilor Jacobson.
In favor.
Councilor Wong.
In favor.
Councilor Garg. Councilor Gore. Mr. Janevsky for Councilor Khan. Councilor Krutzi.
In favor.
Councilor Morris. Councillor Bhatia. Councillor Hooper.
In favor.
Mr. Sumao for Councillor Champagne.
In favor.
I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name again. Councillor Pinchuk.
In favor.
Councillor Zinedine.
In favor.
Councillor Kwan.
In favor.
Councillor Peak. Councillor Huang.
In favor.
Councillor Farouk?
Abstain.
Councillor Hudson?
In favor.
Alright, so that vote carries with 20 in favor, 1 opposed, and 3 abstentions. All right, move on to item 6B. Just so council is aware, I treated that recess that we had earlier as the recess after 90 minutes / an item of business. If someone wants to have an additional recess, please move to do so. Item 6B, Zhang Hudson, move that upon the recommendation of bylaw committee, move to approve Bill Number 1 to amend CRO and DRO hiring procedures in first reading based on the following principles. Principles are listed on the screen and in the main order papers. Councillor Zhang, do you care to introduce?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I don't know really know the difference between introduction and debate. Just let me know if I'm in debate. So the reason for this motion is prior to this, we had two bylaws that conflicted in their content regarding hiring CRO and GRO procedures, and that was Bylaw 100 and Bylaw 2100. In Bylaw 100, it said that CAC would be in charge of hiring CROs, and in Bylaw 2100, it said that it would be a hiring committee made of two tribunes and representative from council. So this motion is basically to correct that. So this is the first principle. We intend to, in second reading, remove from Bylaw 100 any provisions on CRO or GRO hiring procedures, so that would be limited to Bylaw 2100 completely. And other than that, we also added in some clarifications about the makeup of the hiring committees, which are listed in Bylaw in Principle 3 and 4. Which tell you exactly what members are supposed to be on both hiring committees for TRO and CRO. So, yeah, and most of it just, the rest of it just mostly for clarification for the procedures.
All right, just give me 1 second, just in case anyone wants to make any amendments. Vice President Diaz.
I'd like to make a motion to amend.
Just hold off on that until we have some debate, but I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Councillor Bannister.
I also want to make an amendment.
Hold off on that until we have some more debates. Yes, Vice President Hodgson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak wholeheartedly in favor of this bill. It doesn't really change too many technicalities around the process now. It just clarifies some of the wording around there. Previously, there had kind of been two processes through which the CRO could be hired, a kind of CAC hiring committee or the CRO hiring committee. Typically, what was always followed was just the CRO hiring committee was struck through the previous CRO and the two DIVOR tribunals. Last year, the CAC hiring committee was used as the CRO hiring committee had been struck. The CRO had been selected. The recommendation had been made to council. It was ratified. The CRO never ended up taking the position just due to communication error. But as a response to that, the CAC hiring committee was struck. So that's kind of, I guess, the explanation if anyone was aware of the elections process last year and how the CRO was hired last year. That was the kind of bit it followed. Here, I really like this amendment because it just eliminates the CAC bit. It just keeps, there's just one hiring committee, the CRO hiring committee. As you'll notice in the principle, they only need to make a recommendation to council. Council can still do whatever it wants at that point. Obviously, it would not be advisable to then hire someone else as opposed to who they recommend, but the council, the decision still rests in council's hand. And as well, in this situation where we're currently in, actually where the CRO has resigned, the way this bylaw reads right now, it still gives us the ability to, as Councillor Vinchik said, to, with the intent to go and contact the next person in line for the job, we're still following everything in bylaw here. The committee has been struck. A recommendation has been made to council. So we're all rosy there. So I really like this bylaw. It clarifies up this process quite nicely.
Thank you very much, Vice President Hodgson. Councillor Vinchik.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I definitely support the bill. However, I just wanted to clarify a few points from Vice President Hodgson's speech. So first of all, CAC would still be involved in the process. My understanding is that those are just first principles, and then in the second principles, I believe it would be specified that the CAC chair, or perhaps someone else that the committee deems appropriate, would sit on the committee. And that would also help with us having the confidence
in whoever is electing the next hero, so we wouldn't have to have such lengthy discussions as we had last time when we needed to ratify the hero appointment. So yeah, I am definitely in favor of it. I looked at it before as well. Good job to the bio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Binchik. Vice President Diaz, did you want to add a point of debate, or did you want to move your amendment?
Just debate first.
Sure.
So when it was being drafted up, I was lucky to be there. I'm not actually on bylaw, but I was in there as a proxy that day. So when we wrote it up, yeah, it was thought that the non-voting council representative member would be the cap chair. But when we wrote it up, we certainly wanted to be clear why each person was there, so that it really reflected a principle. So that's why we clarified how each person's voting would work, what each person's role in the institution organization as a whole would be, and point two and three were separated out from a single principle in order to articulate the differing role between an outgoing and an incoming chief hearing officer. So I was so happy that we were able to come to this consensus along with our staff that were in attendance at that meeting.
Wonderful. We'll go to Councillor Bannister if you want to make your amendment.
I just want to strike the word consistent, just because I feel as though from year to year, the process may need to change if the position changes, and I would hate to see any restriction happen because the word consistent is there. They're like, we can't change. We need to be consistent. That's my logic.
Is there a seconder for this particular amendment? Is there any opposition to carrying this amendment as friendly?
Yeah, I do.
All right. Councillor Bannister, would you like to introduce, or do you want to go directly into debate?
Let's go right into debate.
All right.
So, not a lot new from what I just said. I'm not going to waste your time, so.
Oh, wait.
So that is all.
Yeah, well.
Sorry, Mr. Speaker.
Governor Hantra.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My concerns with striking out consistent is that the student union, at the end of the day, it's a corporation entity, whatever you want to call it, it works as a business. Business have certain principles and certain hiring principles that need to, in my opinion, need to remain consistent in order to insist that we don't remain unbiased, that year to year we can function. I understand Councillor Bannister's apprehension that, you know, that it may not be that the motion is flexible. I don't think striking the word consistent reduces flexibility. I think it again emphasizes the spirit that it be unbiased, that it be transparent. And then as an organization, we were allocating it to discover governance, that there's a consistent model to go year to year to year. As we've seen now with Discover Governance, it's 2 years in a row that we've flopped the CRO hiring process. What's needed right now isn't flexibility. What's needed right now is consistency in the hiring process. So that's why I believe we should keep the word consistency.
Councillor Bannister?
I believe, my logic here is that the reason we have flopped for 2 years in a row is because the process needs to be changed, and I would like to see it not happen this way or the year before's way next year, which is why I want to remove the word consistent, is not because I don't think this process can be made necessarily more efficient. I think the process needs to be changed, personally.
Governor Hatcher?
And if the Councillor, Mr. Speaker, feels that way, I think we can make those amendments to the bylaw. And those kind of decisions need to be the bylaw. Taking away consistency increases the risk that we are taking more of Council's parameters, more of Council's responsibilities, and potentially delegating it to Discover Governance, which I don't think is based on the last 2 years, is the best thing for Council to do. Having consistency ensures that Discover Governance, that the process is consistent. If there needs to be changes, the hiring process. That's when Council is brought in. That's when Council is consulted. And
that ensures that we do, Councillor Mohammed uses the word duty, fiduciary duty, but I don't think it's fiduciary duty. It's that's where we employ our duty of care as councillors and ensuring that we are making the best decisions on behalf of council, ensuring that the process is unbiased, that the process is transparent, and that the decisions are being made for the best of the organization.
Councillor Shanks.
I just want to make some clarifications on the word consistent. Since this is first principle, it's really on the intent of our word there. So what we meant by consistent is not that it has to remain the same every single year, but rather throughout the process that the information being relayed to the candidates as well as our students as well as council be consistent. And the reason why we have this word is mainly because it was made aware to council as well as CAC that during our CRO hiring process this year, there was inconsistent information being relayed to the CRO candidate, which resigned partially for that reason. And we definitely don't intend to create bylaws that will prohibit council or bylaw committee from making amendments in the future to the process if need be. It's just that we want to ensure that throughout the process of hiring for one year or another that the same type of consistent information is being presented to everybody involved in the process.
Vice President Diaz.
For me, sitting at the table when we were drafting this up, consistent really came from the fact that we had two bylaws, 100 and 2100, that were in competition, and we just wanted to smooth out the bumps so that they worked together. And for me, that was making our bylaws consistent internally.
Full question.
There's nobody left on my speakers list, so we'll vote on the amendment to... Did we have a seconder for that amendment?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Just making sure. So, Bannister, Zhang move to amend Bill number 1 to the election staff hiring process shall be transparent and unbiased. So removing the word consistent and I'm assuming related commas. I'm just assuming. I'm an engineer. All those in favor of removing the word consistent, please raise your placards. All those opposed... That motion fails. We'll go back to the main motion. My speaker's list is exhausted. Is anyone else?
We sent an email. So it's an amendment to add a sixth piece that to really articulate. Well, I guess if you probably pull it up first.
That was from me.
It was delivered from Bo's email under my name. So the thought is that. Since the process this year, and this actually really just came up like in the past couple days with CRO's resignation, but we struck a process for how we can handle CRO resignation or them not being able to take the position. So the thought is that we should have a clear process. So after, I can just read it out. So if the candidate recommended by the hiring committee is unable to accept the chief for...
Sorry.
All good.
Forget about that.
Is unable to accept the chief returning officer position, resigns, or is removed from their position, the council administration committee shall approach other candidates shortlisted by the hiring committee, which is the process that Natalia or Councilor Pinchuk is going through the candidates that were also seen by the hiring committee. And if there are no suitable candidates on that list, then the hiring committee would be restruck. And the reason for that actually ties back into the principle of all of this. And the reason that council representative members do not have votes is because there's a conflict of interest in being able to choose who would manage the election whereby you could potentially partake. So only candidates vetted by a hiring committee will be the ones that would be possible candidates. So that's to really just clarify the process in case of that circumstance, such that future councils will not have to deliberate at length about how to handle that.
So I'm assuming Vice President Diaz is moving that, seconded by Councillor Zhang. Yeah. All right, and I'm assuming that was your introduction.
Thanks.
So move on to debate.
I have a point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
Do we have to take our plates out before, like, 8:30, I thought, so they collect them?
Time out.
You guys aren't going to use your place anymore, just return them
the crate that's outside. So that if they do come around while we're still in session, then they can collect them. Okay. I'm just going to wait until everybody comes back. If you want to start talking, feel free.
I'll wait.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak against this motion. So the reason why, being I think this legislates ourselves into a corner if we come into a certain situation that I think is well evidenced by last year's election. So when I spoke in favor of the main motion, I kind of elaborated on what last year's Seattle hiring process was entailed and some of the challenges that were faced there. And so the biggest issue I have with this is that last sentence, if there are no suitable candidates, the hiring committee shall be struck. Now, the hiring committee is very clearly defined through here, the hiring committee includes the previous year's CRO. So if we have the CRO, say, resign in November, we need to then strike a hiring committee including two die board tribunals and the CRO plus the two non-voting members outlined there. And there's no guarantee that that CRO is still even in the country, which was a bit of the issue was talked about last year, which was why another hiring committee was not struck when to make the decision around the hiring of the CRO, and it was handled at the CAC level, because there was no guarantee that the previous year's CRO could actually be involved in the process. Currently, the hiring committee meets when the CRO, are finishing their term, or they're still in their term, so they are around, they can take part in this process, but if the CRO is unavailable, and that's last year's CRO, so it's completely foreseeable, they have moved on with their life and are not in Edmonton or Canada anymore for just that potential, we can no longer strike the hiring committee. We don't have the required membership here. As well, I mean, yeah, it's always nice to outline exactly what's going to happen in certain cases, and I do agree with the point that leaving the decision in CAC's hands is a bit iffy, because it could be, you could have people running there, or the councillors that are part of the council administration committee maybe running in future elections, and their heavy involvement in the selection of the CRO is not the ideal situation, but I think in the worst case scenario, it's better to leave ourselves options rather than legislate ourselves into a corner.
Thank you, Vice President Hodgson. Councillor Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak in favor of this motion because the last point that we added in basically just clarifies the fact that we are allowing CAC to approach, or a CAC chair to approach other candidates who are listed by the hiring committee if the first candidate resigns or is unable to fulfill those duties. Without this last clause, it would basically, if the CRO were to quit, it would mean that council would have to go through the hiring committee. It would imply that council and the hiring process would have to revert again and to create an entirely new hiring committee and hire a CRO again, even if there were already candidates shortlisted in the first hiring process. One of the concerns that Brendan brought up during our conversation regarding this is that he was concerned with the fact that when we are hiring CRO, even DROs, we have to convene and create a committee every single time, and that can take a really long time to get all the members of the committee together. So number six is really to give CAC the option to approach other candidates that were shortlisted to ensure that we don't have to create the entire hiring process again from scratch.
Thank you, Councillor Zhang. Vice President Diaz.
Can I motion to split number six? Is that possible?
Yep.
Because my thought there, and I can explain before, is to, yeah, precisely where you put your cursor, is because the first part is to cover I think Natalia probably want to speak to this too, that there are different things, and if we don't do number 7, for example, as the speaker has put it, then there's more freedom there. But I still think that number 6 is very important.
Is there a seconder for this motion? Are you seconding the motion, or are you just holding
it? Second at all.
All right, so the motion to use... Oh, let me just double check this. This doesn't happen every day. Yes.
I'd like to withdraw this amendment to the amendment. For now. Based on some information I've received.
Is anyone from council opposed to Vice President Diaz withdrawing this particular motion? Wonderful.
Why not?
Yes.
Are we still on the motion? Like, are we undoing the motion to split?
That if you are opposed to splitting... If you are opposed to the withdrawal of splitting this motion. Okay. So, we'll go back to debate on this amendment. Next person on the speaker's list is Councilor Binchik.
Wonderful. Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Speaker. So, I see, as it stands right now, I see two major problems with, and like, in general, I love the clause, but there are two major problems. One is that shall approach other candidates shortlisted by the hiring committee. I would only suggest that council administration committee approach only the runner-up, because then people are shortlisted, and after the interview, they, for example, are not suitable candidates. So we don't really want to waste our time and, you know, offer the job to people who the committee already seemed not ideal for the position. Why we are contacting the other candidate right now is because it was close to tie. They were so close that Brandon won only by, I guess, slight chance. So that's why, for the sake of time, we'll be offering the job.
The counselor needs a suitable runner up?
Yes. I'm sorry.
Just
Okay, was it my accent? Or
No. I was just... Indeed, like you said, runner-up, and maybe a suitable runner-up, just in case the runner-up is not suitable.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect. Thank you. And also, when it comes to the last sentence, I'll propose an amendment after, but I'm just explaining why I will be proposing those amendments. When it comes to the last sentence, if there are no suitable shortlisted candidates, I don't think that's appropriate, because first of all, if I had to write a sentence, I would write it in a sense, if the next runner up is no longer interested in the position, then council administration committee should explore other options. So in that case, it is a little bit more open ended, and in general, the idea of just offering the job to all shortlisted candidates just gets me worried a lot. So with that said, I will try to propose an amendment on the spot.
So I'll continue. I'll put you on the speaker's list again, and you can move to amend.
Okay, sounds
good. Yeah, it won't take another speaker.
Okay, perfect.
Governor, answer it.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Yes.
If I pass, does that mean I lose the speaking turn?
No. Councillor Bencher.
Could you put out the principles there?
Yep.
Okay. Can I propose an amendment and then allow councillors to kind of tie the wording as friendly? Okay, so let's do four is removed from their position. The Council Administration Committee shall approach next runner-up as recommended by the hiring committee. I know runner-up is really a technical term, but feel free to amend that as friendly. And if the runner-up is no longer interested in the position, Council Administration Committee should explore other options.
Can I make some amendments to that?
Please do.
Technically, no.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Speaker, point of comment, Chamber?
Yes.
When could I make a motion to refer this back to bylaw?
I believe you can make that at any time. Let me just double check that. Yeah, as far as I can tell, you can make that motion at any time. So, if the next runner-up is no longer interested in the position, then
the Council Administration Committee shall explore other options.
And just delete all the rest of this?
Yes.
To further my answer to Vice President Hodgson, I probably, it sounds weird to say this, but I'd probably wait until either the amendments pass or if they fail, so that it's not, you're not referring the committee to the amendment, but rather the main motion, if that makes sense. Okay, so, to reread, and feel free to correct this, the Council Administration Committee shall approach the next runner-up. If the next runner-up is no longer interested in the position, CAC shall explore other options. This would remove the wording that would say the Council Administration Committee shall approach other candidates shortlisted by the hiring committee. If there are no suitable shortlisted candidates, the hiring committee shall be struck. Is there a seconder for this particular amendment?
Could we potentially add after shall approach the next runner-up if recommended by the hiring committee? Or as recommended by the hiring committee. Actually, could we go with if? Because as... Thank you.
Is there a seconder for this particular amendment to the amendment? Seeing none.
Oh.
We'll go back to the amendment to the main motion.
Point of information?
Yes.
Point of information. Sorry, what did you say? To do it now or to do it after we vote on this?
After we vote on this.
Ah.
What would you do to save time? You can just do it now.
The confusion I want to avoid is that the amendment rather than the main motion is referred to committee, if that makes sense. So I don't want the motion to refer the amendment to the committee as opposed to referring the full motion to the committee, if that makes sense to the government.
Point of parliamentary.
Yes.
If we do it now, are we referring the whole motion plus the amendment? The amendment?
My personal opinion, Robert's Rules, as far as I can tell, is pretty silent on this.
Because the point, what we want them to look at is...
To look at the amendment.
So wouldn't it make more sense to refer it back with the amendment?
The other thing you have to recognize is that those members are bylaw members, so they're probably going to bring the amendment to bylaw committee if this motion is referred back to bylaw anyways. I just don't want there to be any doubt that it's the main motion that's being referred back to bylaw as opposed to just the amendment.
Are all the bylaw people in the room right now? Can we just assume that they're smart?
It's not about bylaw committee. It's more about
how it's written on the order papers. So I don't have anyone else on my speakers list. So I will go ahead and say that we are voting on this particular amendment. So, Clause 6, if the candidate recommended by the hiring committee is unable to accept the chief returning officer position, resigns, or is removed from their position, CAC shall approach other candidates shortlisted by the hiring committee. If there are no suitable shortlisted candidates, the hiring committee shall be struck. All those in favor of this particular amendment, please raise your placards. All those opposed? Great. That motion fails.
Mr. Speaker, I move to refer this bill back to bylaw committee.
Is there a seconder? Councillor Huang, so that was moved by Vice President Hodgson. There is debate, it can be debated and it can be amended. Would you like to introduce?
Yes, I would, Mr. Speaker.
Okay, wonderful.
So thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reason for doing this is, as we all saw, there was considerable amount of debate going either which way in this room on that. I heard a lot of things I like from lots of people. Just because I voted against something in a way or something didn't pass, it doesn't mean it wasn't a good idea. It's just this debate started to get very complicated, and having a group of 30 people with limited speaking turns and all trying to get their input in and then having sidebars is just not an effective way to make for a governance body to make a decision. So we can go to bylaw committee. Bylaw committee can spend some time hashing it out, and we can be very happy with what we get back.
Is there any debate on this motion? Is anyone opposed to carrying this motion? Wonderful. So, everyone is in favor of referring this particular bill back to committee. So, yes. Bylaw chair, yay. All right. So, items 6C through 6F have been withdrawn. So we'll move on to item 7A. Lau Hodgson moved to appoint one member of Students' Council to the Vice President's University Relations Review Committee in September 2014. Yes.
Should have nominations been done before?
Yes and no. The way I like to do it is that nominations to Students' Council committees and to Students' Council sort of like related boards, I'll special order those. But just because this is something that's, to me, is outside the scope of a little bit of Students' Council, hopefully there's not that much to be on. But if council's interested in special ordering all nominations and appointments, we can do that as well. From now on, I can do that if council's interested. All right. So, President Lau, would you care to introduce this motion?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, Dr. Deborah Fasega Osborne, the current Vice President of University Relations, Her term ends on June 30th of 2015, and she has advised the president that she would like to stand for a second term in office. So that being said, the process in UAPL is for a search and review committee to be struck, an advisory review committee specifically to review the term that Dr. Fasega Osborne has held to assess her work and determine whether or not she deserves a second term. So I think we're looking for somebody here that's interested in the university's role within our city, within the current environment, I would say, and the relationship that we hope our university can have with the larger community. The meeting date is scheduled for Monday, September 15th, and there may be additional meetings. It shouldn't be a heavy committee at all. But the impact of this and the scope of the meeting is rather large.
Right. Councillor Farooq.
Just a question to you, President Lau. What's the time commitment for this meeting?
Currently, it states that on Monday, September 15th, there'll be a meeting from 8:30 in the morning till 4:30 p.m. So anyone appointed must be able to attend this meeting. And there may be additional meetings, depending on the outcomes of that one meeting.
Governor Hansra.
I'd like to nominate Councillor Zhang.
Councillor Zhang, do you accept?
Yep.
Councillor Muhammad.
I'd like to nominate myself.
I'm assuming you accept?
Yep. Wonderful.
Any other nominations? Yes, Councilor Farouk.
I'd like to nominate myself.
Okay. Then you accept. Wonderful.
I see.
All right. Any other nominations? Any other points of debate? Any other information required by Students' Council? Seeing none, we'll move on to the speaker. So, every councillor will have 1 minute to state their case, and then we will move to a heads-down, placards-up vote. So, to start, we'll go in the order that everyone was nominated. Councillor Zhang, you have 1 minute.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think I would be awesome for this position. I really care about the community. Part of my mandate going to council was to kind of really wanted to engage the external community with the student council and student body in general. I'm really involved in my own community. I sit on the board for Turnberg's. I also, as a part of my job for the GOA, I'm an ambassador for the government. So part of my job is to kind of get out there, talk to the community, get any feedback that we want just in terms of public service. So I think that this would be just a cherry on top of that job. I could do this just like any time that I go do any of my other stuff. So I think I would be perfect for this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Zhang. Councillor Muhammad.
The last few years in any university in Alberta has been very, very troubling. You see that through the post-secondary cuts or any other action that government has taken. I want to sit on this committee to see exactly what the university is doing to engage these different levels of government, what was going through their mind when post-secondary education was cut, and what goes through their mind when students suffer. Because we have to admit that things haven't been going very well in the past few years. So I want to see exactly what this vice president is doing. I want to see if this vice president is worth the hundreds of thousands of dollars that were paid this individual. So that's why I want to sit on.
Thank you, Councillor Muhammad. Councillor Farouk.
All right. I believe that, apart from my blundering starting, that much of the hindrance in the effectiveness of public representatives and anybody who really works with making policies and doing anything that affects a large group of people is that they do have a lack of understanding of the bureaucracy of the organization they're within. And that goes for everybody working within council or outside of council, university, administration, whatever. And I believe that being part of this committee would really help me to better understand the bureaucracy and how everything works and how the relations work within the university. And that would really help and aid in my future as well as the university, obviously. Thank you.
Wonderful. So that's move to a heads down, buckets of votes. Please vote quickly because, not gonna lie, need to use the bathroom. All those in favor of Councillor Zhang, please raise your placards. All those in favor of Councillor Muhammad, please raise your placards. All those in favor of Councillor Farouk, please raise your placards. All those in favor of none of the above, please raise your placards. Wonderful. Heads up. Congratulations to Councillor Zhang. All right. With that being the last item of business, we'll
take a motion from the floor.
Yes.
Let's make a motion to censure the SU executive 2013 to 2014 in relation to their misrepresentation of facts in regards to the leadership college.
Is there a second for this motion? Seeing none.
I'll second it.
All right.
What apparently drink cream, Mr. Speaker?
Yes.
I thought motions from the floor were out of order or like they're less preferred, so I thought we had a process in place to, not accept them.
That's a very interesting point, Vice President Hodgson. Yes, I do not like motions from the floor. If council doesn't want this motion and would like to wait until the next meeting to consider this motion, we can do so.
Point of parliamentary.
Yes.
Can we censure individuals in the previous term?
I don't know.
You can.
I'm going to review in standing orders.
Point of parliamentary inquiry.
Hold on a second. Time out. All right, so from Governor Hansara's question, standing orders doesn't really put a timeline on at what point you can censure who you'd like to censure. It just says, if council will permit me to read from papers, since council may rebuke the action or conduct of an individual through a motion to censure, censure is an on-the-record rebuke that entails no additional actions or consequences. So it doesn't really put a timeline on when somebody can be censured, as far as I can see. That being said, a lot of like that sort of ends at the end of their term. So it's up to council's interpretation as to how they would like to take this. You can censure them if you wish. It really has no force or effect. Yes.
So if this were to go through, does it mean that they can't speak about it at all, or it's not?
It's not a motion to censor. It's a motion to censure.
What does that mean?
I just read this. Okay, so once again, I'll read this for Councillor Zhang's benefit.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Students' Council may rebuke the action or conduct of an individual through a motion to censure. A censure is an on-the-record rebuke that entails no additional actions or consequences.
Okay. Sorry. My apologies to Council.
Yes.
Are we past the seconding aspect, or are we in the debate?
Yeah.
Yes, I second it.
Okay. Yes. So we're not into debate just yet because there's all these points of inquiry and all that good stuff. Sure. Is there anyone else that has any points to raise or? Yes, Councillor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I'm a little bit ESL here, but what does rebuke mean?
It's just kind of like a. If I could put this in layman's terms, to me it's just a slap on the wrist.
Okay.
That's basically a censure. But it's a slap on the wrist that is a very serious slap on the wrist. But once again, has no additional consequences or anything like that. That's Governor Hansara could say something else, but according to my reading of standing orders, that's basically what a censure is. It's pretty serious, but at the same time, A, it has no additional actions or consequences related to it, and B, and in this particular case, it's for a previous executive.
Okay.
Point of parliamentary inquiry?
Yes.
Am I allowed to ask Councillor Mohammed a question?
During his introduction, you may ask.
Point of parliamentary inquiry?
Yes.
Or in request for, I don't know.
Sure.
Do we know what, like, past examples have been for one executive?
Absolutely, Mr. Speaker.
Please, Governor Hansara, if you'd like to enlighten us on, just to give council a little bit of an example as to what
usually constitutes.
Mr. Speaker, I can give an anecdotal version, or if council would permit me and give me a couple of minutes, I've actually fought in a previous recording, council term, a censure motion against somebody. There was a motion, and I have the data on file, but they actually historically.
Okay, Governor Hansara, give us a 30-second spiel if you can. If
over the past, since the inception of students' union, censure 30 seconds. Censure has been, there's been a precedent set for censure to be used in some cases where executives have lied, intentionally lied to the council, and or inappropriately used funds. for personal gain or to attempt to manipulate council. So it is, I understand since the last few years there has been an impeachment process has been made, but traditionally based on precedent, it is a punishment used only for the most severe and malicious actions done by executive officers.
Wonderful. That was probably within 30 seconds.
Oh, it absolutely was, Mr. Speaker.
I started this late. Yes.
If this motion were passed,
it would just be recorded as Council 2014-2015 censuring last year's executive, and that's it. So,
Mr. Speaker, there are certain further.
Okay, well, we can discuss that during debate, if you'd like. So, a motion was made from Councillor Muhammad, seconded by Councillor Zhang. Let me readjust the timer here. All right. Councillor Muhammad, would you care to introduce, or do you want to just jump directly into debate? All right. Go ahead.
Reading the reports from the last for this council and the last council, it's pretty absurd to find out. So to give context, last council, we had this whole discussion around the leadership college. We initially opposed it, saying, don't want this elitist thing. But then the last year's executive met with the university president, the university vice provost. They came to some sort of deal. They came to council, and they said, now this program will reach up to a third of students. They said that to council, and then they said, how do you like this first? And then we had a whole debate based on that idea that this will now reach 10,000 people. In numerous news articles, Council
any opposition to Councillor Muhammad reading from papers?
It's on Metro Edmonton. The title is Concept Overhaul for Labor and Alberta.
Did the executives tell us that it would be 10,000 or Indira herself? That
it says right here. I'll read from the article. What we have now is a significant departure from what was presented to the university a couple months ago. Kuzma added, plans for the college to impact at least one-third of all U of A students. Kuzma said the new plans for the facility will give students access to mentorship programs, travel opportunities, courses, and special lectures, not just to those living in the residence. This college will have a direct impact on at least 10,000 or on at least one-third of students on campus. But now we have the information that's the ideal. It's a hope. That's probably not even going to happen now. Like, my perception, when executives came and said, they said this will happen, it will reach 10,000 people, but we based the whole policy discussion, put all of our bargaining chips on a lot. And I truly, I'm really disturbed by this and how the university is not even, they're considering it to see its ideal, to see its hope. They're not giving us any stats, they're not following up on the 10,000 talking point, and it's just really frustrating because I feel that I've been lied to last council, and I'm deeply disturbed. And I want to know exactly what happened in that meeting because it wasn't true, and the information given to council wasn't true. So I want to censure the executive of last council because this is deeply, deeply, deeply disturbing.
Are there any requests for information? I'm going to take those first just so that if Councillor Muhammad's time expires, as it's expiring, we can just ask him a bunch of questions. So I think...
My question would be the change of rhetoric around the Leadership College, was that a change that the university admin communicated to the executive, to the class council executive, and because of that, the message was also changed through the SU executives. So I'm wondering if it's the SU executives who changed this themselves, or based on the information that was given to them from the university admin, which changed. Because
they would have different implications. One would imply that the SU executive is trying to manipulate the information themselves. Other would imply that they've just been given faulty information by the university admin.
Yeah. If you look at the PECs, the news release that the SU put out February 24, 2014, and the Venture News article, the university president and the SU president were running on the same talking points. Over here in the same article, it says union president in Durham, Massachusetts, said the recent consultation of student leaders helped to address concerns with the residents. Quote, to some extent, we've always been planning a leadership college that was a broad campus-wide activity. She said, this is a process of really understanding what would be separately combined into. So the SU executives presented us with what seemed like a promise that this would reach 10,000 people, when in reality, that never happened. And from what the information we have now, the university is intending that to happen. My opinion, they misrepresented facts, and maybe the university told them something, maybe they went off it, but what they told us now is not true. And I'm deeply disappointed.
Point of order.
Yes.
I don't think the counselor's suggestion that 10,000 students are about to be reached is factually incorrect, because based on my understanding, no decision has been made on the program of your body calling.
You're entering debate. You're entering debate.
My time's still going. I'd like to finish this point. What the promise was that the new plan would be to incorporate 10,000 students. Right now, that's not even in the new plan. The new plan is still the old plan.
Mr. Speaker, seeing as our debate is going to be more or less than saying the university lied to us, can we go with the camera?
No, the students misrepresented facts.
So, just to be very clear on all this, Councillor Muhammad is directing his censure to the executive committee, not to any university administrators. So, this is if I understand correctly, Councillor Muhammad, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Basically, what he's saying is that the executive committee, when they brought this information to council, misrepresented facts and told council something, while in reality, that something is incorrect. Is that okay?
Point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr.
Yes.
Speaker. Is it too late to challenge your decision to accept this motion from the floor?
It's never too late.
I move to challenge the chair to accept this decision from the floor, or this motion from the floor.
Someone else wanted the second. Is there a second to challenging the chair? Councilor Farouk. All right, so I'll give a quick introduction. It's something that came up at this meeting during question period. There's lots of information pertaining to Councilor Muhammad's
I revoke my previous challenge.
Anyways, so we'll move into debate. I have a bunch of people on my speakers list. First up is Vice President Diaz.
Yeah, I'm really very happy. I put my placard up 20 minutes ago to be on the speakers list. So I just had a couple points I was writing down, is that there's a big issue of burden of proof here. It's two articles, or a couple of articles you cited. We cannot reasonably substantiate that the exec wasn't operating then under information it thought to be correct. It could have been the narrative that they had received from the administration at that time. It could have changed since then. I'd also like to say that because you're saying that the exec lied and saying that this would reach 10,000 people, because the center has not yet been, or the, sorry, because the initiative has not yet launched, we can't reasonably assume whether or not it will or will not reach 10,000 people. Therefore, your statement can't be true, because if they could have lied about something that hasn't yet occurred, that's about it.
Councillor Grookey.
I pass.
Governor Hanser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to echo a lot of what Vice President Diaz has said. I'd also like to add my uncomfortableness of
of censuring somebody from a previous term. One, they're not here. Second of all, this is a new term. We bring around for all the facts. And yet, this is echoing Vice President Diaz's assertion of burden of proof. Second of all, again, like Vice President Diaz, we don't know, based on discussions, but we have the executive, that council. You know, it's my understanding that we negotiate, the executive negotiated on good faith. Now, Mr. Speaker, since I have a lot to echo what Vice President Diaz, if you allow me, I'd like to speak up on papers regarding some historical perspectives of where censures have been made to give the executive council a greater understanding extremities of what censures are happening.
Is there any opposition to Governor Hassel reading from papers? Yes, there is opposition.
All right, I'll go off my memory then, Mr. Speaker.
Sorry, before you continue, is there any opposition to me just running out for a quick second so I can actually use the bathroom? Wonderful. Continue.
Mr. Speaker,
you'll be back in 4 minutes, man.
When the speaker's gone, is the capture supposed to?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's been used a couple of times. 1979 was the first time it's been used. It was used when somebody, when an executive used substage for their bathroom. That was one used. The most recent example of censure was used when a guy named Bobby Sanders, the vice president academic. He was running for president. So what he did was on his vice president academic, he used his budget for his office at the SU money to create literature that was supporting his presidential campaign way back in January and February. He started dispersing those to students. Those are some of the times and there was another case in 1986 where the executives, there was big tuition increase. What happened essentially was the executive at that time was responsible for starting a rally, did nothing about it. They essentially posted no opposition to this tuition increase, slowly censured him for being incompetent. So those are some of the areas where censure's been. It is the most serious mechanism available for counsel. I know there's impeachment, but historically no one's been impeached and likely don't deserve to be impeached. Censure is reserved for the worst things. And you know what? Based on my discussions with counsel, I have no reason to doubt that the executive were doing everything but acting in good faith. They're based on assumption. I've actually talked to President Coops, who was off record on this issue, and he showed his frustration that it looked like there seemed to be a promise made, and that the promise to be taken away. So I can't censure an executive based on what I know because the administration is backing off or because of a lack of communication or a breakdown in communication. But this issue seems to be more about is a breakdown of communication. Breakdown of communications happened between the executive committees and administration as well. Catherine, our vice president, Orsic, and I were talking before the meeting how Peter Lawley College, it seemed like we had something going on at the committee level. But when it got to the higher level, some of the promises made were magically disappeared. Right? This happens in governance. And this is a constant issue since essentially the student union has been created. You know, we have President Yamagishi. He can talk all about his Lister debate days and the miscommunications there. Right. So to censure executives on miscommunication, yes, like Councillor Mohammed, I agree. I'm frustrated that this promise appears to be revoked. We don't even know if it's being revoked, that they're reconsidering this, right, and what's going on. I'm frustrated. But to censure an executive who aren't even here and can't even defend themselves, that's not due process, and that is opposed to fundamental rules of law.
Call to question.
There's a call to question. Is there a seconder to call to question? So, Bannister is seconded by Wang.
Question for tradition. If the motion is defeated, can it be brought back again?
As far as I know, a motion to reconsider can be made. But only by somebody who is on the winning side and only basically at this meeting of Students' Council. We're going to vote on calling to question.
Point of information.
Yes.
How many more speakers on the speaker list?
There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 more individuals on the speaker's list.
Okay.
All of those in favor of calling to question, please raise your placards. Please raise them high. All those opposed? Any abstentions that wish to be noted? Great. So, that call to question passes. So, the question is put.
Call for division.
Division has been called. So, the motion was to censure the 2013-2014 SU executives. Division was called. So, President Lau. Opposed?
wait.
Point of order.
No.
Vice President Oritzik.
Abstain.
Vice President Kinda. Vice President Hodgson.
Opposed.
Vice President Diaz.
Opposed.
Governor Hansera.
Opposed.
Councillor Allard? Ms. Shi for Councillor Chen. Councillor Bannister?
Opposed.
Councillor Mohammed?
Favor.
Councillor Sleeman?
Opposed.
Councillor Zhang?
Opposed.
Councillor Jadak? Councillor Grokey?
Heavily opposed.
Councillor Bryce? Councillor Babatunde? Councillor Horvat? Councillor Fidoski? Councillor Jacobson. Councillor Wong. Councillor Garg. Councillor Gore. Mr. Janevsky for Councillor Khan. Councillor Krusi. Councillor Morris. Councillor Bhatia. Councillor Hooper. Councillor Champagne. Councillor Binchik.
I'd like to change my
Okay. To oppose?
Yep. Oh.
Councillor Zinedine? Councillor Kwan? Councillor P? Councillor Huang? Councillor Farouk? Councillor Hudson? So,
point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Speaker.
Yes.
So, I just want to clarify that only the winning party can make a motion to reconsider this at this meeting. After this meeting, we can't bring this motion back.
If the governor will permit me, I will read from papers, Robert's rules, if that's okay with. So, reading from Chapter 7, Subsection B, another important thing that you must know about reconsider is that there is only a limited period of time within which it can be made. In the usual case, this motion can be made only on the same day on which the vote sought to be reconsidered was taken. The only exception to this rule is in the case of a session, such as a lengthy convention in which meetings take place over a period of more than one day. In that event, the motion to reconsider can be made on the same day the original vote was taken, or on the next succeeding day within the session on which a business meeting is held. By and large, however, the thing for you to keep in mind is that if you change your mind after the meeting is over, in the usual situation, you can forget about the motion to reconsider. It will be too late to make such a motion. All right. So, counting up the votes. So, there were 0 in favor, 19 opposed, and 3 abstentions. So that motion fails. Because we have no further business, I'm going to go ahead and use that.
Mr. Speaker, point of inquiry.
Yes.
Point of, I'm using these point of parliamentary inquiries to create bound parameters about a potential motion that has to be considered. Based on my understanding of the law and citing the actual Supreme Court justice, generally there's been the spirit of a motion or spirit of a law. If something's against that, we will not reconsider. That will become deemed illegal. Now that being said, based on what you said, hypothetically, if there's a motion to hypothetically censure 2 or 3 of the examples, since that's essentially against the spirit of the motion to reconsider, would you allow that or would?
If a motion to reconsider was made based on this particular motion, I would not allow it. Councillor Muhammad or any other councillor or any other member of Students' Council would have to challenge my ruling on that if they would like to have that motion reconsidered. However, that being said, if the councillor wished to censure a member of the 2014-2015 executive, that is his prerogative.
But no one from 2013-2014.
No.
So, that's fine.
As a whole.
Point of parliamentary question.
Yes.
So, theoretically, if this meeting ends with no motion to reconsider, we will never see censure the 2013-2014 executives.
Correct.
Could we see something that said moves to censure Dustin Shetland, Petros Kuzmu, and Adam Woods? Or the VP, academic VP, external president? Is that the same nature, or is that a different motion?
As far as, and from my personal understanding, and the former president Yamaguchi can add in his 2 cents following this particular meeting if councillors are interested. I would rule that a motion like that would be out of order because those individuals form that executive committee. For a motion to censure, according to our standing orders, it's a motion to censure individuals as opposed to the collective group. That makes sense.
Motion adjourned.
Okay, well, before your point of parliamentary inquiry, I was just going to say we're adjourned, and I'm going to use the division as attendance, if that works for everyone on council. So you're free to go.
You're not. Just try on the side.
That's how they get you.
How may we communicate to you which size we need? Just sign up on my laptop where I carry it open. The spreadsheet is here.
Okay, so our meeting is adjourned at 9:09 p.m. Please return all your placards. Please make sure all the plates you have used have been replaced in the crates. Thank you.
I learned a new word today.
What, censure?
Yeah. I thought you and Hunter both had an accent. Like, just couldn't say the word properly.
What, censure?
Yeah. I was like, this sounds stupid. I
can't say anything ever. What are you think you're doing?
Sorry.
Get out of my sight.
Is anyone still up for rat? Rat?
Do they still serve food?
No. Probably not.
They did last time. They had some nachos. Stephanie, did I answer your question? Was that a good one? Your last
question. Yeah. I just wanted to ensure that wasn't really the
But you could censure all of the 4 remaining members of the executive.
Is that McDonald's?
So if you need people to censure. As far as like standing orders go, I'm gonna say no.
Yeah.
You can always shout for that. You guys.
Like theoretically, that's part of the same executive and the old executive. But there would be no point in
discussing. Honestly, unless you don't have the time, yeah. Honestly, I never really understood what it was before, though.
I have a change.
Are you going to put this to rest?